are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, January 27th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Bolton's book leaks, creating a nightmare scenario for vulnerable Republican senators. Meanwhile, Igor Fruman's surreptitious audio recording reveals the insanity that is the Trump administration. Latest polls show a massive surge for Sanders as the DNC builds a firewall. Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter and seven others die in a helicopter crash. And as Donald Trump's defense team flails, senators decide soon whether witnesses will be called. Meanwhile, Jared Kushner reportedly has worked out the details of his Israeli-Palestinian peace plan. So that's good. Tennessee now provides legal protection for adoption agencies which discriminate against gay people. Pentagon says 34 troops suffered traumatic brain injuries in the Iranian strike. The CIA used a prisoner as a torture training prop. And lastly, a former Salvadoran general admits that the U.S.-backed military committed the massacre at El Mozote. All this and more on today's program. And sitting in today, helping us out, is Nomi Key Konst.
You did it!
Of the Nomi Key Show. Nomi Key, how are you?
I'm doing great, Samuel.
It's Samuel, is actually the way I pronounce it. Yes. Thanks for stopping in and hanging with us. And your show,
yes.
When is it launching?
It launched this weekend on Patreon.
Okay.
And it is now on YouTube at the full show is on YouTube, in visually everything. It's up there right now as
visually?
This morning. Video.
Okay.
I'm learning the lingo, okay?
I understand, right? Video.
It's not
it's
the
a
audio.
Surprise visual album, okay? She pulled a Beyonce.
This is, it's all holographic
yes.
Material.
It's all a hologram right here in your studio. Did you see the new technology?
Okay. So what is the Patreon address?
So the Patreon address is www.patreon.com/thenomiki show. Nomiki. And we have all the different kinds of memberships starting at $9, going all the way up. I mean, you can
to a million.
Also, to $1 million.
Right.
You could just fund the show for life. I'm excited because we released the first show and some extras as well for Patreon members. And I'm going to be releasing a few more extras this week, interviews that I've done in the last couple of days and some takes. We're going to be discussing the DNC here, but I'm saving the good stuff.
No, of course.
For my show.
Of course. Oh, I'm used to that dynamic. Believe me. Believe me. Believe me. All right, that's great. So we will put a link in the podcast description today. With so much news, it's nuts. Obviously, the Bolton story, we're going to get to that. That is a massive in terms of, you know, and I don't want to get into it now, but I think everybody who listens to the show on even a semi-regular basis realizes that for me, impeachment has always been about the Democrats taking back the Senate. And in that regard, I think we have reached the peak efficacy that impeachment could be in that respect. And I should just reiterate, that's political. I mean, I think we need to hold powerful people to account. I think there should have been a half dozen other things that we impeached Donald Trump over. And we got a story of the CIA using one of the prisoners that they had back in the early aughts as a training guide on how to torture people. And frankly, you know, since everybody's convened, let's impeach the Bush administration and those war criminals from there. But we will get to all that in just a moment. But first, over the weekend, right? Was it over the weekend? The March for Life. And
I missed it, sadly.
Yes, you did miss it. I'm not surprised by that. It is the first time in history that a U.S. president has appeared at the March for Life. I don't need to tell you, Nomi, that the a woman's right to choose in this country has been abrogated. It is, for practical purposes, gone within maybe a half a dozen states at this point. From a practical standpoint, I mean, you could still cross lines, state lines, and get an abortion, in other states, or if you have the opportunity to travel, X amount of miles and you're wealthy, it's there. But for many people, many women who, are living in poverty or simply don't have, much means, this right has been abrogated, and the Supreme Court is allowing now trap laws and a whole host of ways in which this right's being curtailed. And the Supreme Court, as it's constituted now, we may see them continue to infringe upon that right, if not overturn it completely. But here is Donald Trump. And this dynamic is the one that I think explains his ability to become president in 2016, which is that the right, the self-identified evangelical Christians, who we know a significant portion of them don't even attend church. It is an identity. It is an identity. It's a tribal identity that is not necessarily defined by any actions or even beliefs necessarily, at least in the context of Christianity. However, they understand that on the cultural level, Donald Trump is not necessarily one of them, but he's going to do their bidding, and he has proved it. And he has delivered in a way that I think, frankly, no other Republican president has delivered so specifically on this amount. He had a list from the Heritage Foundation of judges he was going to appoint. And he's appointed every single one of them and more because he doesn't care.
Yeah.
And his complete lack of shamelessness is a huge strength of him here, because he can say this in such a way that it gives the evangelical Christians a plausible deniability about who the guy really is.
Right.
Here he is one-on-one on Fox News. Who's this guy? Do we know who the interview? We don't know. Just a nameless Fox drone.
I'll chime in for that part.
Do you know who he is?
Probably. I don't know who it is yet.
It's that guy in the blue.
This guy.
Yeah.
Oh, he fills in for Laura Ingraham.
There you go.
I forgot his name.
That guy. And here he is interviewing the president about that moment when the president came to be pro-life.
They were saying you elevated this movement and that you made them feel included. Others are saying you're doing this for politics. It's an election year. When was the moment when you went from pro-choice to pro-life? Was there a moment?
Well, it was, and there was a specific moment, and it was quite a while ago, but it was something that's turned out to be even more, I think probably even more of a truth than I would have thought at the time. But it's just an honor to be here today. You know, they have tens of thousands of people outside too, Raymond.
Yeah.
So this was their all-time record, and I think they beat it by a lot. And incredible people. They're just incredible people.
It's Raymond is the guy's name, apparently. And that's not only was it a specific moment, but it's even gotten more true, that moment.
I thought it was when Melania was pregnant with Barron. Like, he's told this story before. He just forgot it.
I couldn't remember.
Oh, yeah, that's
good
it.
For you.
Thanks,
yes,
Jeremy.
Right. Exactly. That was the moment. And that moment's gotten more true as he's grown taller.
There was a moment. It was specific. It was a specific moment, and it meant a lot to me, Raymond. Raymond Arroyo, by the
Arroyo,
way.
Yes, that is.
Raymond Arroyo. There he is.
When God told him that he was supposed to reign over this country, because every Republican president has said that at one moment God spoke to him, and because they're all men, and that he was going to be president. I mean, George W. Bush did this. And of course, this is evangelical speak, because I think one way that they can release themselves from their conscience is by saying, well, this was God's choice.
Redemption. Yes. Yes. Redemption and God's choice. And I mean, I think with Bush, I think he's actually legit.
Right.
At least in the context of Christianity. I mean, obviously Trump is lying. He doesn't care. I think that to the extent that he has any, and that's fine. I mean, I wish we had politicians on the left who have no emotional attachment to any of it, but deliver the specifics that we want in terms of the policy. I don't care if Joe Biden got up there and said, you know what? Last night, FDR showed up at the edge of my bed and he said, expand Social Security and Medicare for all. And I looked at Bernie's proposal and I don't think it goes far enough. I think we need to do more. And that's on day one. That's what I'm going to do. And somebody said, when did that moment happen? He goes, you know, the other day.
It's gotten truer.
And if 3 years into his presidency, we could say, like, wow, he did it. I'd be like, God bless. I mean, I don't care. And but with that said, we're talking about a political program, not something that's supposedly based upon some type of personal morality, which ostensibly we hear and have heard, you know, of this this moral preaching for decades now.
The one thing that is confusing for me is, didn't Donald Trump just get a bunch of pushback from evangelical leaders in, I forgot which publication. It was like an evangelical publication, and they all editorial.
Christianity Today or something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's an outlier.
It's an outlier. Okay. But it was powerful. It was like the most read publication, and they had said, we're not supporting this man or whatever.
Right.
Is.
But, you know, they're not.
It's old news.
Yeah, exactly. It's old news, and, you know, we only follow one leader. Donald Trump. So they're not going to listen to that.
Our Lord and Savior, Donald Trump.
Folks, postage rates have gone up again. Thankfully, stamps.com eases the pain with big discounts off post office retail rates. Stamps.com, you save 5 cents off of every first class stamp and up to 40% off shipping rates. That's pretty good. And that kind of savings, of course, adds up in this environment, especially for small businesses. Well, I don't do it anymore because I got I ran out. But when we first launched this show, I would ship out DVDs to people.
Oh my gosh!
And it was exhausting.
Of what?
Of movies I had made back in the day. And I had my kid stuff the envelope. It became like basically that was what the family did.
Yeah.
And by the end of that, I became aware of stamps.com and got all my postage basically at home because it was just getting too nuts. But then I ended that whole thing. But I got to tell you, stamps.com, it saves time, it saves money. And anything apparently now that you can do at the post office, you can do at stamps.com. You can personally print official U.S. postage 24/7. Get up at 3 a.m. I didn't mail that letter. Oh my God, I need a stamp. I'm going to print it out. I'm going to run down to the mailbox.
You can stop violating child labor laws.
There you go. You could, exactly. I could, my kids do this at any time of the day. Any package, any class of mail for anywhere. Once your mail is ready, you just drop it in a mailbox. With stamps.com, you get discounted postage rates that you can't even get at the post office. They buy so much postage. It's a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters that you get. You see it at a law firm or something like that. Right. I don't know. There's no equipment to lease. There's no long-term commitments. Over 700,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. Right now, our listeners get a special offer that includes a four-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Majority Report. That's the name of this program, Majority Report. At Stamps.com, enter Majority Report. Check it out.
That'd be great for campaigns. Yeah. Send out literature.
Yep. Direct
for
mail.
Running for office.
There you go.
A lot of people know. So.
There you go. Also, Daniel Miskiewicz is a real ZipRecruiter customer who used ZipRecruiter to hire for his company Cafe Altura. And the following is a testimonial script based on his employer story. Wow. This is crazy. Altura, well, it's not that crazy. I mean, look, I'm one of these people too. I don't know why I don't get featured in these. Have we heard whether or not I'm... Brendan came from ZipRecruiter.
Oh.
He wasn't working for ZipRecruiter. That's where I found him.
You found him.
Well, he found me. That's one of the things that's amazing about ZipRecruiter. It's not only is it a online resource where you can organize applications as they come in and resumes, et cetera. They go out and basically pull people into the system. As far as Miskiewicz, this Dylan Miskiewicz from Cafe Altura, he experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. Hmm. I don't even know what a director for coffee is. And then he switched to ZipRecruiter and he saw an immediate difference. And you can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter finds candidates for you, and its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates faster. After posting his job to ZipRecruiter, Dylan said he was amazed by how quickly great candidates were applying and found his new director of coffee in just a few days. I literally had a half a dozen people who I thought were awesome. Brendan was just slightly more, a lot more awesome, I mean. With results like that, it's no wonder why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. And you can see why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Majority, M-A-J-O-R-I-T-Y. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. And lastly, Nomi, I don't know if you've known me long enough to know me. Since, right.
Know me.
To have known me back when I didn't have the style that I have now in terms of my clothes. But
I did watch you.
What's that?
If I didn't know you, I watched you.
Well, my style is upgraded over the past couple of years. I would describe my style as understated. I don't know exactly.
Before or now?
Well, now.
Okay.
Now and practical, not too show. I don't know what it would be. Dad-ish. It's very hard for me to shop. But I have found a new and I think what's going to be highly successful way. Stitch Fix.
Oh, yeah.
It's a personal styling service that delivers your favorite clothing, your favorite shoes, your accessories directly to you. This is how it works. First, you do a style profile. Then they have an expert stylist who will send you handpicked box based on your preferences. Mine's right over there. They have men's boxes, they have kids' boxes, they have women's boxes. There's no subscription required. You can pick between automatic shipments or only getting new pieces on demand. The shipping, exchanges, and returns are always free. They charge you $20 towards the styling fee, but you claw that back when you buy your first piece of clothing. So I got my first box. I would say about 50% is spot on. There's a pair of pants. Where are those pants from again? I don't remember. I'm sorry.
But they're nice. Know about his clothing?
And they're right there. I left them out there so I could remember. These things work for me, which is pretty rare. Flag and Anthem. I hadn't heard of them before. I mean, I'm not terribly savvy when it comes to clothes.
Do they go to stores? Like, how does
this... I don't know how they do it.
So interesting.
And but I also got a pair of desert boots in there, which I think are going to work for me. They're like, I don't know. They're like sort of like they're boot shoes. I mean, I'm not that savvy about this stuff, which is nice. Then there was two other things in there that I was like, nah, no. But the easy thing, you send it back. I'm going to try round two. You can get started today at stitchfix.com/majority. Get 25% off when you keep everything in your box. At stitchfix.com/majority for an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. Check it out if you have the same debilitating problems as I do when it comes to shopping and going. I get panic attacks when I go into a store.
Especially like living in a city. It's just like such a thing. To go to the store and carry the bags and be around all the people and the heat and the noise. I mean, all the stores in everywhere are so loud.
Yeah. I get overwhelmed. Yeah. It's too many things and I don't like any of it. And I don't like, it goes back to my childhood. I'll talk about that another day. But, all right, let's get into this. The big story in terms of impeachment. And as we speak, I think today is, if I'm not mistaken, is Alan Dershowitz.
Yes.
He's going to get up for an hour and he is going to talk about how the Constitution says you cannot impeach a president for abuse of power. And of course, it's completely contrary to what he said in the past. He's pretending he's not working for the president. He is. This is Alan Dershowitz doing his best to keep at arm's length. But meanwhile, this story about it's the John Bolton thing that is going to make this difference. I mean, from the beginning, I have never thought that Donald Trump could be thrown out of office unless there was actual video of him naked running around the front lawn of the White House chasing a small boy. That is the only circumstance where I believe that it is possible for him not only to be impeached, he has been impeached now. But impeached and removed from office.
Well, he hired Alan Dershowitz just in case he needed to be protected from chasing a small boy.
It's a twofer.
Yes.
Yeah, even and then, they'd probably find a way to rationalize it.
I think it would be close. I think it would be close, but it depends on how explicit the video is. If it was grainy in any way,
I think
you're right, fake news. But the real issue in terms of impeachment are a half a dozen senators, Tom Tillis, both the senators in Georgia, particularly the new one, Joni Ernst, Martha McSally, I said it right, finally. obviously, Susan Collins, Cory Gardner. I think, who else do we have? Joni Ernst, Tom Tillis. I mean, those are the big ones right there. Tom Tillis. Is polling poorly against his rival. Susan Collins is in deep trouble. Cory Gardner is in deep trouble. Joni Ernst may be having some problems. Martha McSally is going to have some problems, I think. Those folks in Georgia could very well have some problems. We just lost the progressive challenger in that race, sadly, in the primary for lack of funding. But
it's crazy.
This is going to make it even harder.
Right.
Because apparently, John Bolton's book, the publisher had announced it's coming out March 17th, which is 2 days after most of the filing deadlines for primaries against these senators. They are jammed up. They're going to vote to exonerate the president. That's going to happen no matter what. The real question is, can they afford to vote for witnesses? I think let's listen to what Mitt Romney says here, because Mitt Romney is a guy who is the only one, I think, maybe Lamar Alexander because he's retiring, but
he's so close to Mitch McConnell.
But it's also here's the other thing that's operative here. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. Let's do Mitt Romney.
It's increasingly apparent that it would be important to hear from John Bolton. I, of course, will make a final decision on witnesses after we've heard from not only the prosecution, but also the defense. But I think at this stage, it's pretty fair to say that John Bolton has a relevant testimony. I think it's increasingly likely that other Republicans will join those of us who think we should hear from John Bolton.
those of us.
Now, this is interesting because Lamar Alexander, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski. Murkowski's not in danger, but she has a brand to maintain. And she's already had her issues with the Republican Party, right? She went in as a write-in. He has been meeting with them. All they need is four votes. Mm-hmm. And it's quite possible that the witnesses come in. And if the witnesses come in, I think what they're going to do is they're going to put John Bolton behind a closed door session. Mm-hmm. They're going to keep his deposition secret.
Right.
They're going to avoid the whole thing. And that's it. But the problem they have is that John Bolton comes out 3 weeks later and they can say that he's lying.
Yeah.
But.
You mean comes out on TV and just gives his version or.
Yeah. When he's going around with his book.
Yeah.
You know, 2 months later and he's going to say, this is what I said in those hearings.
Exactly. And he's, and what people don't understand about John Bolton, he's crazy.
He's a nut.
He like loves TV and just says, if you think Trump's crazy, different kind of crazy.
And let's remember, this guy was all over Fox News.
Right, exactly.
It's going to be very hard to sort of scrub the existence of this guy. But here's the other thing. I think someone like Tom Tillis, I think someone like Joni Ernst, mm-hmm. I think someone like maybe even Cory Gardner, although that's arguable, they're not going to vote for witnesses. They're just going to go down with the ship because if they're looking at a situation where they're going to lose either way.
Right.
Because if they abandon Trump or Trump decides that they didn't do what Trump wants, they're going to attack him and they're going to lose. Then they're screwed out of any sort of like post-political or post sort of political entrepreneurial.
Right.
They want to go back and lobby their friends. And if they are if they're toxic and Donald Trump wins again, they're in big, big trouble.
Well, they can join MSNBC as contributors.
That's the only option that they'll have at that point. But I don't think Tom Tillis, I mean, they would have to completely do a 360 at this point,
right,
or 180. But I mean, isn't that the calculation, do you think, that they're doing? I mean,
I think what's one factor that plays into this is, you know, McConnell holds the funds, too. And so he knows very well that in order to keep the Senate in place, he has to balance out, you know, it's like light pressure. It really does come down to Mitch McConnell and what he's pressuring them to do and knowing very specifically the polling down to the counties, down to the precincts, you know, where the audiences are, you know, the voters are on this topic. It's not an easy calculus at the end of the day. I mean, he has to appear strong, McConnell. He has to appear like the Republican Party is in unity. I think what you're saying about holding the witnesses behind closed doors is the safe path for him and the safe path for all of them, including Lamar Alexander, who, of course, is leaving.
It's the least painful.
It's the least painful. And Collins, at the end of the day, as independent as she appears to be, she often votes in line.
Always.
Right.
I mean, always, unless it's completely meaningless.
So why are we even having a conversation about her? If
Well, I think the bottom line is just this, is that there is in all of these states. I don't think they're swing voters in the context necessarily of a presidential election.
Right.
But they want their senator to show a certain amount of independence, which is why they can justify voting for Trump.
That's right.
And they are those conservatives that you may have met that, you know, were sort of maybe Jeb Bush conservatives mm-hmm. who listen to NPR and think that they're getting both sides of the story because I'm listening to NPR. And those are the people that I think are going to abandon these Republican senators. Mm-hmm. They'll still vote for Trump, I think, for the most part.
Isn't that crazy?
But I think the idea is that I want a divided government. I want to make it seem like I'm, you know, so as long as I get my tax cuts, I can still sort of like play this off. I have a feeling, I mean, that's basically who we're talking about. And that's also, I think, why the Democrats have been, and I found it distasteful, frankly, but so not full on jingoistic, but pretty mm-hmm. jingoistic in some of their, you know, their approaches to this, mm-hmm. you know, the militaristic aspects of Ukraine. But it'll be fascinating to see how they handle this over the next couple of days, because they just destroyed literally dozens of Republican senators' arguments. Like, there's no one who's heard specifically that the president had a quid pro quo.
This
well,
amazing.
John Bolton and Mick Mulvaney have. In fact, the
March 17th, the book comes out.
The book now, it's just been announced. It's coming out March 17th.
That's 2 months before the Georgia primary. March, April, May. Yeah, May.
Do you think it's going to have any implication in terms of like of the Democratic primaries? I don't see why it would. At this
I don't
point.
Think so at all. I mean,
unless Joe Biden gets subpoenaed, right. Because they could subpoena him 51 votes, and then there's going to be pressure on him to show up, I think.
I mean, that won't affect the primaries for other candidates. I mean, well, for Joe Biden, of course, but in terms of Senate races and other races, I don't think it'll affect.
No. So here are the sort of the big, supposedly, at least this is according to the New York Times, and it's unclear who leaked this. The manuscript was sent to the White House to be vetted for stuff that was sensitive, in terms of national security. The lawyer said that the manuscript was sent there. The Times implies that people have seen different drafts, mm-hmm. which are different than the manuscript, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's not the final version. Right. And so it's unclear where this is coming from. But
did he write this with somebody else? I can't imagine. John
did
Bolton.
He?
Yeah, he had a.
I'm sure he had a ghostwriter. Sort of if it's not, you know, co-credited, I don't know. I mean, but apparently it says that one in an August meeting with Bolton, Trump said he didn't want to release the aid until Ukraine sent all the documents pertaining to Hillary and Biden. Now, here's the thing. This also, we heard the Igor Fruman tape. You start to get the sense that Donald Trump is just an idiot lunatic.
Yeah.
And it's unclear if he's, it depends on what your definition of lying is. But like, you know.
With intent, with, you know. Awareness that this is not this is. I mean, he may think he's not breaking the law because he doesn't understand the law.
He doesn't, but it's even it's it, which is no defense. But it's more like you can hear people around the table basically showing that this guy it's really the last person who speaks to him,
right?
And you could tell him anything, and if you were the last person to say it and with some conviction, he'd just be like, "Okay." It's fascinating,
yeah,
and terrifying to hear the level of conversation that's happening around this table. It's a fundraising, you know. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Jack Nicholson's grandson was there too. They're all talking about golf. It's very weird. Anyways, in a meeting about the aid, Trump wanted to release Ukraine wanted all the documents. He wanted all that. Mike Pompeo, apparently, according to Bolton, told him that he knew that the allegations against Marie Yovanovitch were false. He believed that Rudy may have been pursuing another agenda when he floated them as a way of getting rid of Yovanovitch. Because what's clearly happening is it turns out that Parnas and Fruman knew Trump enough to be sitting in that room before they started working with Rudy Giuliani, mm-hmm. which... basically is consistent with my theory that you had mobsters trying to get rid of Yovanovitch because they wanted to keep a dirty prosecutor mm-hmm. there. And Rudy just was getting paid. Mm-hmm. Like they're his clients insofar as that, like they've hired Rudy to orchestrate all this stuff. It's unbelievable.
This is the guy who RICO'd the city in the early 80s and, you know, imprisoned all the mobsters pretty much in New York.
All the mobsters.
I shouldn't say that. The Italian mobsters. He's a self-hating Italian.
All the Italian mobsters.
All the Russians out.
Which opened the door uh-huh. for a lot of Russian mobsters.
Bada bing, bada boom.
I mean, and someone just put up an old Wayne Barrett story on Twitter that showed that... charges against Trump just died in Rudy Giuliani's office.
Yes.
But back in the day. But so Pompeo knew that Yovanovitch was being set up. And apparently Bolton told Bill Barr that Bill Barr was mentioned in the July call to Zelensky, Bill Barr has claimed that he only learned about that in August. So Bolton is throwing all these people under the bus.
Well, Barr's so loyal to Trump.
Yes. And according to Bolton, Mick Mulvaney was on at least one call with Rudy Giuliani. So Mick Mulvaney knew what was going on. He gets thrown under the bus. And apparently Bolton, Pompeo, and Mark Esper all told Trump to release the aid almost a dozen times. This is according to Bolton. So this stuff is incredibly damning. And there's nobody's issued any denials.
This is so crazy. So let's think about how this came about. He must have written this when? Before the impeachment? Or, I mean, of course, there's several versions, but...
Well, he was jettisoned like 4 months ago.
Right.
Right? 4 or 5 months ago. The impeachment started 3 months ago, essentially. So he's been writing it for the past 4 months.
So, I mean, okay.
But everybody must have known this story.
During the process. But he's basically introducing himself to the impeachment trial.
He's trying. He's been trying. I mean, he announced a week or two ago that he would, if he was subpoenaed by the Senate, he would come and talk. And it is nuts. It's nuts. Now, I should also add, I wouldn't trust John Bolton with anything. I don't think he's lying about this stuff. I just think that his agenda is different from you and I. But use him as a lever to get a Democratic Senate. I'm all in favor of that. That's basically my thinking there. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. And we're going to find out in the next couple of days as to whether the Republicans, I mean, I think it's super dangerous for them not to vote to have witnesses. I think they're going to vote to have witnesses. They're going to hide Bolton. They're going to ride that out. And just, I think they must realize, like, they're going to lose the Senate. The question is by how much?
Right?
I mean, it's one thing to lose three or four seats, or, you know, I guess if you lose three, that's it, right? And you four seats, you got to lose. Mm-hmm. But if they lose six or seven.
Oh, God.
And meanwhile, just to remind everybody, Chris Coons is building the machine in which he's going to sell out all the Democrats. He is working right now on his gang of whatever it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to come out. He is going to be, it's going to be him and somebody else. Mm-hmm. He's going to try and weasel in there and get credit for this witness deal. Mm-hmm. And he's going to start to forge this transpartisan alliance, right, which is only going to be operable if a Democrat takes the White House. And particularly if the Democrats take the Senate, he is going to be the Joe Lieberman. He's going to put himself right in the middle of the fulcrum of this. And he's going to sell us out. And he's going to do it with, I don't know if he's going to do it with Mark Kelly, mm-hmm, or if he's going to do it with, you know, Hickenlooper or Manchin or Kristen Sinema. I mean,
that's
the only, you know, the only question is which one of those are going to finally say, like, oh, wait a second, maybe I'm progressive again. Because I'm no longer in the mix of deciding, you know, one of the powerful ones.
Well, it's not going to be Sinema, because Sinema took that turn. I mean, she ran as the most progressive state legislator in Arizona and for Congress, and literally became the most conservative member.
It's, I mean, who knows? Because this is all about, with these senators, it's all about putting themselves in a position where they have as much power in the Senate as they can get.
Right.
And for some of them, that and it's also a function of what's happening in their state in terms of Trump. Mm-hmm. So Manchin, I don't think he can move,
right,
really, even if he wanted to. I don't think he wants to. I think he's, you know, I don't know if he's literally a corporate criminal, but he's, one could describe him like that and not be, you know, be in the general ballpark.
Can you imagine if there was a progressive, I mean, I know that Paula Jean Swearingen is run against him, but somebody who had media attention, like a Cynthia Nixon of West Virginia that could run a progressive that could run against Manchin, because he is not working class. And is the second that's exposed in a massive way in West Virginia, he becomes tremendously vulnerable.
There's a guy named Stephen Smith, I think his name is, who is running a fascinating campaign for the governorship, I think, mm-hmm. there in West Virginia. And if he wins,
yeah,
I think that'll be the beginning of the end of the Joe Manchins.
Right.
Because it will create a template. I mean, you know, there's so many things that are up in the air right now that are just nuts. I want to talk about, when we go in the fun half, I want to promise people we're going to talk about the appointments that Tom Perez has made to the DNC and pick up on this conversation that we keep having to punt because of the enormous amount of...
I don't think I have to convince you anymore. I think it happened.
Well...
I think you got it.
This time around...
Yeah.
This to me looks very, very...
This happened last time, by the way. This happens...
The same...
They do... Yes, this happens every single time.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that. Yeah. We'll talk about that.
Teaser. Stick around.
And we should just... there's just so much news here that it's sort of nuts. Let's briefly talk about, what's happening right now in Iowa. I saw a tweet last night from a political reporter who said that they've been covering Iowa since 2000. Hmm. And I guess there was a rally in Ames, AOC and Bernie Sanders. And they said they've never seen that kind of turnout, that Bernie had one quarter of the crowd 6 months ago.
Wow.
And they had never seen a turnout like that at a rally. There is, I want to talk to you about all of this, obviously, but the polling is starting to show, like, it's just beginning poll out of poll. We're showing Bernie pulling away in Iowa and New Hampshire.
He's running with it right now. It's...
One never knows.
Right.
They apparently have asked, the Sanders campaign has asked volunteers to stop making phone calls from out of state into Iowa.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Because they were supposed to do 5 million. They've done 7 million.
Right.
And they now want people to stay in their home states, particularly if your primary is in March.
Yeah.
And start to go door to door.
Yep. You know, if there's an office in your state, we don't have one in New York yet.
The texts I've been getting from Bernie have been a little different lately. At first it was like, I'm pulling up, I'm coming from behind, give me some money, Jamie. And now it's like, let's keep the momentum going.
Yeah, yeah.
We're doing great.
They should have audio. They should have like a system. There should be a way to do an audio text.
Oh, that's interesting.
That would be helpful to
hear his voice like, in my head.
Yeah, you don't need an audio because you're right. Everybody knows his voice.
I'm not opening a MP3 from some number I don't know.
That's right. True. Yeah.
No way.
Also, it's
voicemail. Maybe
you can't do that through the texting programs. You can't like send, from what I understand, because we use those for our campaign. And I was like, oh, send a video or send a this. And they're like, yeah, we can't do that. We can only send like this many words and tell people to RSVP to something.
Well, I'm going to get an app for my phone that reads all my texts in the Bernie voice. So then that'll solve the problem.
Can you do that?
Probably.
Do you remember when the GPS system hired Snoop Dogg to do one of the voices that was, you know, available on your car 5 years ago?
I remember they were doing stuff like that. I don't know why they don't do more of that.
That's... You know what? Special perk. I will read your text for you for a month if you subscribe.
Careful.
just careful what you
wish for
fine,
with those
fine print.
but here, I think this is the problem that Joe Biden's having. I mean, Joe Biden seems to be like sort of, I don't know if you could say he's cratering, but it feels like it. He is dropping to, you know, tied more or less for third in a couple of these polls, maybe close to fourth in some. What? Go ahead.
So there's a little hot take. This is not my hot take, and I don't know if I contribute it, but I'll ask the person later if I can contribute. I'm on a forum. Very smart analysis. In Iowa, Buttigieg's support is very soft, and Biden is the main second choice given an electability screen. Biden could pick up a ton in the caucuses because of the perceived strength against Trump, which is scary to him because in his mind, Biden's very plausibly the weakest in general, obviously. And so he breaks down the polling because this is the poll that came out, New York Times poll, I think.
The Times Siena poll.
Siena poll that came out a a couple days ago. You know, that's why we have to pay attention to these second choices and these, you know, electability numbers. And it's that's why it's so important that Bernie has such a strong lead. And
right.
It can't just be a couple points. He has to have like 10%.
If Biden comes in second.
Yeah.
It's, I don't want to say it's a problem, but it's a
delegate problem.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
Because he needs to be thrashed, I think.
Mm-hmm.
To dislodge the foundations of his support in South Carolina.
Yep.
And in Texas, I think, to a certain extent, too, where it's just sort of like built upon this notion that he is the guy who can beat Trump.
The weakness needs to be perceived by
he needs
the
to
loyal
be
yeah,
exactly
voters.
Because it's not like, I mean, Bernie could come in fourth and he's not going to lose his base.
Not at all. Yeah. They might get more fired up. People.
Right. because their support for him is founded upon other things. I think that's true of Warren to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
I think Buttigieg is also sort of soft in that way. Mm-hmm. But Biden, more than any of them, I think, like, if he comes in third or fourth in Iowa, if he comes in fourth in Iowa and third in New Hampshire, let's say.
Right.
If he comes in third in New Hampshire, fourth, I mean, third in Iowa and fourth in New Hampshire, I think he's got some problems. I think it's like, from the perspective of people who don't want Biden, obviously fourth in Iowa is best case scenario,
mm-hmm.
because then that'll affect where he is in New Hampshire, mm-hmm. and so on and so on. So
yeah, like, how is he supposed to beat Donald Trump when he can't even beat this crazy socialist from Vermont?
Well, it's also, I think that's the idea, or anybody. Never mind the crazy socialists. He can't get ahead of Warren. He can't get ahead of Buttigieg. I mean, I think that's the whole point. That's why fourth, as opposed to second, is so key. But what also I think is hurting him is, one, I think it looked weak for him to say that he wasn't going to testify, because people remember that Hillary Clinton was able to go in front of that Benghazi committee for 11 hours and basically, you know, hand it to Trey Gowdy.
But she was not running at that point yet.
Well, she wasn't running, but I mean, it was an expectation that you would have
of
someone that, like, if they are completely being maligned, that they can go up and defend themselves.
For 12 hours, I mean, for however many hours, the man can't get off script.
Well, Biden could do it. He could come in and say, like, I'll testify, but we're limiting it to 2 hours.
But there's going
to
be a million issues that pop up. Aside from the fact that his son is, he gets defensive around this subject. He snapped at reporters. He snapped at voters.
I was just going to say, why would he not go in? But
that should be a sound on your.
How do we not have that? Why is that not coming up now? Maybe you get off your phone. That should be pumped. You should have why in the background.
He's managing your
right
Twitter.
Now.
Come on. He's doing a million things at once.
I'm beatboxing. I'm a human sample.
All right. This is the other thing that I think.
Yeah, come on, man.
This is the other thing that I think is causing him a problem. Is Joe Biden arguing, which one should we start with, two or three?
Well,
let's start with three. Here's three. This is Joe Biden saying, I never proposed a freeze on Social Security.
Do you think, though, that it's fair for voters to question your commitment to Social Security when in the past you proposed a freeze to it?
No, I didn't propose a freeze. Look, we're talking about is the time. You mean when we went together and decided
to. You talked about it in the context of balancing the budget.
No,
so is that something that voters should be.
It was in the context of we saved Social Security during the Reagan administration was about to go under. And everyone from Teddy Kennedy on voted for that to save Social Security.
Okay.
There we go.
Here, let's play the clip. And you can see what the date of this is. What is that? 95, wow. Which incidentally, I'm bad at math, but is over a decade, over 10 years after the time that he's claimed. It was true during the Reagan administration, the Senate, everybody went along with it. They raised taxes on the Social Security taxes in anticipation of the baby boom. Getting into retirement, and they raised the taxes. They have not raised the cap sufficiently since then, but that did increase the amount of money available in the trust fund and deal with this sort of glut of people that we had that were born after the war. Here's Joe Biden. This is over 10 years later. He's bragging about this. He's not talking about the same thing.
When I argued that we should freeze federal spending, I meant Social Security as well. I meant Medicare and Medicaid. I meant veterans benefits. I meant every single solitary thing in the government. And I not only tried it once, I tried it twice, I tried it a third time, and I tried it a fourth time.
Wow. Maybe he doesn't remember. I don't know.
Bernie needs to take that ad.
Oh, well, but here is Biden now again.
Oh, that is so crazy.
It's like sort of backtracking because apparently he didn't realize that C-SPAN is available.
Becomes a problem.
Actually in real contention to get the whole nomination.
This fight with Bernie Sanders over Social Security, you've said that he, quote, doctored video of you from the Senate back in the day talking about Social Security. But you did argue that cost of living adjustments as part of a general spending freeze were necessary to cut federal spending and reduce the deficit. That aside,
that was 20 years ago.
Even if Sanders is playing a little rough here and your position has changed, what about those Democratic voters who say...
It hasn't changed.
What about those Democratic voters who say that Bernie's been consistent this whole time?
Well, he hasn't been, but I'm not going to attack Bernie. He hadn't even been consistent on Social Security. But here's the deal. I have laid out clearly what my plan for Social Security is. I'm going to increase Social Security benefits. I'm going to raise taxes for people making over $400,000 so they pay the same tax on every dollar you pay at your salary, at $100,000 or $50,000 or $40,000. That will, in fact, allow us to get those folks who are outliving their Social Security in terms of benefits, be able them to increase their benefits. Those families where a spouse dies and the total Social Security goes down, increase their benefits.
All right. The plan that he's proposing with the donut hole, I might drop it a little bit lower, but I mean that above 400,000. I mean the bottom line is the reason why we're taking in less income as for Social Security is because of huge wealth disparity and good plan, but he's lying about his record, and it is true that Sanders has not been totally consistent. At some times he said he wants to increase Social Security, and at other times he says, I want to increase Social Security more than that. But that's it. At one point he said the word adjustment, and it was clear what he was saying was increase.
It's unreal.
That's what they're hanging all it on is he said adjustment.
He said adjustment, but bookended in like that same year, he called for increases. Yeah. So he's saying we should adjust Social Security.
It's not working. It's just not working.
It's not resonating. Here's Sanders responding to that. This is this weekend. And, you know, I'm struck by this because, we'll do this and I'll talk in a second.
Let me ask you about Vice President Joe Biden. He is looking for an apology for a video circulated by your campaign that he says takes his position on Social Security out of context. Will you apologize?
No, of course I won't. Not on that one, I won't. For many, many years as a United States Senator, Joe Biden has been on the floor and elsewhere talking about the need to freeze or cut Social Security benefits. He voted for the balanced budget amendment.
So you believe it is wrong that Vice President Biden supported a freeze of cost of living adjustments in Social Security?
Absolutely. Bad vote. I voted against it. There are ways to raise money in order to protect the working families of this country. Cutting Social Security ain't one of them.
I mean, you know, that's good for him.
Yep.
And what strikes me is how salient Social Security remains. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama, I'm convinced, I got to maybe dig around for this a little bit, but Barack Obama, the way that in addition, obviously all the stuff in the ground game, but in terms of rhetoric, going into the Iowa caucus, he started talking about Social Security and there was no difference between the candidates in terms of like their Social Security votes. They had never taken votes for Social Security. They probably were all on the same page of like, we need to sort of cut Social Security or to the extent that anybody had indicated anything. But what he did is he said Social Security was in a crisis. Now I did not like this obviously because Social Security was not in a crisis. And I don't like that type of rhetoric. I'm just talking about in the context of what he did. Mm-hmm. He said it was in crisis. And just by saying that it was in crisis, without sort of even talking about a solution necessarily, I think it gained him a lot of votes just because he acknowledged he created a problem.
That's right.
That people didn't necessarily know existed or, you know, didn't exist, mm-hmm. but that they assumed, okay, he's on it. And I care so much about my Social Security. I want the person who's so focused on Social Security. They're aware that there's a problem. They're going to help me deal with it. I mean, mm-hmm. I found that fascinating. And it, I think that's what's happening here, except for there is a much greater sort of distinction between the two candidates in terms of the way they have approached Social Security in the past.
Well, it's so crazy to me that we are having essentially what used to be I don't mean like 40 years ago. I mean, even lockbox. Remember the lockbox with Gore and Bush? I mean, these were conversations Democrats had against Republicans.
Yeah.
Biden probably, even though he voted in the 90s, he probably even had these conversations against Republicans until it didn't suit him or the DLC came in and said, switch your tactics. We're, you know, we got to balance the budget, whatever.
I mean, even when Gore was talking about lockbox, they were still talking about balancing the budget.
Of course.
I mean, yeah, the lockbox was more just sort of like, let's not allow cuts to Social Security because they've already, the lockbox actually referred back to what Bush subsequently later, I don't know if you remember this, but he went to the Treasury Department, did a press op in the Treasury Department, surrounded by file cabinets. He said,
oh my God,
this is where your Social Security's gone. It's just IOUs. Open up one of these drawers. See, it just says IOU. That's nothing.
Wow, and I remember this.
Yes. And this is the way that that Bush was trying to privatize Social Security. And then everybody sort of understood, like, oh, that's what he meant by lockbox, as in the money that's owed that you cannot allow the general budget to raid from the Social Security Trust Fund to borrow money because later the Republicans are going to try and default on those loans.
That is brilliant. That's like some messaging, you know.
That Bush did?
Yeah, I mean, Bush era, of course, was the messaging was key, but standing in front of a bunch of
It did not work. I mean, it did not work. They tried to privatize Social Security. I mean, that's the thing. That Social Security has such a salience. And that is why.
But it wasn't during the election. It was once he was in office.
Once he was in office.
Okay. So I thought it was an electoral.
Oh, no, no,
I don't
no.
remember this.
No, this was in 2004, 2005 or something like that. But I guess the thing that I don't know that the voters know yet, and maybe this is like the second act of this sort of play, is to say that Joe Biden's perspective on Social Security is going to be a liability against Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Because Donald Trump could play the same video.
That's right.
And Donald Trump could say, like, I've never tried to cut Social Security. That's right.
And the interesting thing about Social Security is older voters who were around and may actually remember this are going to be reminded of this. It's not like you're speaking to a new.
I don't think there was anybody at the time that they were listening to that was saying, like, this is a problem.
This is it. Yeah.
It was just taken for granted largely that the only way to deal with this problem is to, you know, is to cut or do. I mean, that's why the Obama administration for 3, maybe 4 years, 3.5, basically we're putting on the table cuts to Social Security in this way. Mm-hmm. Cuts in the increase of cost of living, cuts in the form of lowering the cost of living adjustments, and which is, of course, a cut unless you have massive deflation of pharmaceutical prices, which we have not had and we were never going to have. All right, we got to take a break, head into the fun half. I just want to remind people, the way you support this program, if you enjoy it, and the way you get extra content, and the way you listen to it without commercials, go to jointhemajorityreport.com. So easy, so convenient. You go there, and then, like, you hear trumpets, and all sorts of good things happen. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, the AM Quickie. Getting it out the door earlier. People are responding very well. it's spicier, it's funnier, it's there's more of like a I'm splitting my time with Lucy Steiner doing each morning. People are loving it. And the more you subscribe to AM Quickie for free, it's completely free, incidentally. It's just like listening to a podcast. Get that 5 minutes. You're walking out the door, 8 a.m. East Coast time. Sets the table for you. It also is very helpful to us here at the Greater Majority Report family. So amquickie.com. Nomi Key, would you like to tell people about your show?
Yes, of course. So you can find my new show just launched. I urge you to go to patreon.com/TheNomiKeyShow. We have our first episode up, full episode, with Justin Jackson, congressional candidate Melanie DiRigo, who's running against Tom Suozzi, who is a downstate Democrat, a really bad Democrat.
In New York,
supporting ICE. He is a member of the Problem Solvers Caucus, which basically just supports Republicans. He caucuses with Republicans, does not release his votes publicly through this caucus, we learned. Yeah, they don't have to, because they vote internally as a caucus, and then it's a cover for them. So they say, well, I just follow what the caucus tells me. And the caucus doesn't have to say, you know, what the numbers were.
Is this a state senator?
He's a congressman representing Queens, parts of Queens, and Long Island.
Oh, he just votes with the problem solver.
It's like the
caucus.
IDC.
Yes, okay, I see.
But, at the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference. Yeah. So Melanie DiRigo is running against him. She's extraordinary. You got to check out that interview. And then we do some, speaking of Joe Biden, we're following the money, his 40 years, his money trail. We're going to continuously do that on our Follow the Money segment. And you get that early by going to patreon.com/TheNomiKeyShow and on YouTube and all the podcasty places.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, I speak with Daniel Denver, author of All American Nativism, How the Bipartisan War on Immigrants Explains Politics as We Know It, which is a very good book out now on Verso. He is also the host of Jacobin's The Dig, which is a very good podcast that I listen to when I want to learn things in a way that kind of reminds me of like the NPR of my youth in like a Proustian way, but is actually like socialist. We had a pretty good conversation, if I do say myself. We talk about the history of nativism in America, the material factors driving it, how Democrats and Republicans alike have used nativist politics for their own political gain. We talk about Bernie's immigration platform and how he's evolved on the issue, what a decent left populist trade policy would even be, and what you can do to get involved. So check it out, folks. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Matt, do you know what's on TMBS tomorrow night?
I do not
know. Oh, well, folks should check it out. He's not doing it tomorrow night, is he?
Actually, no, that's a good point.
TMBS is going to be on...
Michael's not here, so it will be on Friday.
On Friday.
And I'm not sure who's going to be there.
Tomorrow, Michael and I are going to be on at Harvard for a panel, if you're in the area.
Cornel West will be on.
He's going to be on, yeah. Cornel West is on Michael's panel. I can pull that up, actually, if you want. I'm going to be on with Crystal Ball and Phil Agnew, who's a Bernie Sanders surrogate. Sorry to jump in, but it's a Michael plug, so I might as well just tell everybody. But if you're there, it's an amazing panel. I'm trying to find it right now so I can read all the people on it. Oh, here it is. It's called Class Warfare, The Future of Left Politics. I'm on the Revolution Will Not Be Televised with Crystal Ball, Megan Day, Katie Halper, and myself. He is on The Battle for the Soul of the Democratic Party with Esha Krishnawaswamy. I can't say her last name, but I know her. Michael Brooks, Phil Agnew, and Cornel West. Come on.
There you go.
King.
Okay.
Come on.
So check out TMBS, patreon.com/TMBS. And I think the second half of the Lula interview is coming up soon.
I think probably Wednesday.
On the YouTube.com/The Michael Brooks Show channel. Matt.
Literary hangover. We're talking about the past of class warfare for the next few episodes. Bacon's Rebellion specifically. I'll be recording another Ebenezer Cook poem on Bacon's Rebellion. It's in couplets from 1730-ish around there. And we're going to be talking about the different sort of race and class elements of Bacon's Rebellion, and also the sort of royalist versus liberty element of it. So check that out. Look forward to that, folks.
I can't get past the whole death of the salesman thing. But, all right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
You think I might be a Nazi?
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.